Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I am so happy today to have as my guest Melissa Carey. She's the author of Macy's Guide to the Odd, Strange, Bizarre, Unique, Unexplained, and Twisted series. She published the first book in the series, the Macy's Guide series, The Power Awakened, in March of 2012. Now, I'm incredibly excited because guess who got to read this book? I have read this book, and it is absolutely fantastic. How do you do it, Melissa? I never start out easy, you see. This is the second season. I'm so excited to have you as my first guest. But I never start out easy because I've read this book. How would you describe it in your words?
Macy's Guide, I always tell people they ask me this, how did you start? And I've actually written the last section of the book first, was the idea of the perfect day. And what grew from that is thinking about that we all have a different idea of what a perfect day would be, based on our life experiences. So everybody's perfect day is different. And that idea popped into my head, at which point the main character, Macy, came in. And her storyline grabbed me, that your perfect day would be different if you lost a parent. And what does that feel like, you know, as a child? And going to school or going places where people don't know how to speak to you anymore, because they don't want to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. So that grabbed me. I started writing. And then it pitched into my head the mother's storyline that connects with Macy, where she starts to have dreams that come true and the following the intuition. And now she's lost that guide, where she would have grown up with a mother who would have encouraged that and explained it to her. And all these odd experiences and the strange things that happen that, you know, she's lost that connection and now has to find her way and write her own guide.
But you took it beyond that. I mean, you also developed a children's program based on the book's themes about dreams and dream symbols, about what it is to be an individual and dealing with the feelings of grief and loss. I mean, you didn't just write the book. You followed it up. You followed it up by helping children. Now, how old is Macy, so the audience knows?
When we meet Macy, she's in fifth grade. She's right around the 11-year mark, and that's her age when we meet her.
Right, and the lovely thing about that is what I liked about her age, because I forgot if it was 11 or 12, and it can be either in fifth grade, but what really struck me about The Power Awakened is not only that title, which makes me want to immediately read it, because it kind of implies that her ability to dream true will lead to big things. And what you've done that I think is genius, having read it, is that not only did you put The Power Awakened in there to make me want to read on more, but she's at the precipice of puberty. She's just starting puberty. So if the power's awakening, I look towards book two, which will be coming out in May 2013, which I'm looking forward to. I will be snatching that up because I think you, and I don't know if you meant to do this or not, but on the precipice of puberty, The Power Awakened, those are powerful things, and I'm dying to know if that's going to play into book two.
It is, and it is definitely intentional because The Power Awakened, from my end, is not just this new idea for her of the dreams and being able to follow this, but it is what every child is going through, and it's finding your own self-empowerment and finding your unique place in the world and taking your experiences and finding out who you are and getting your own power to be who you want to be, to overcome your obstacles, you know, to explore life the way that you need to do. And really, you know, some of it is about being a good person. And as the series develops, we'll find that too.
I know, I'm dying. I really am. I can't wait for book two because there are several kind of mysteries and things that flow through the book. It flows very well, and you keep wanting to find out, but you make the character so sympathetic. This is always going to be a fascination of mine because before we went on air, I was asking Melissa, exactly how is it that you can crawl back into what it was to be a 12-year-old, because I can vaguely remember that age, but only vaguely, because let's face it, I'm ancient. I remember velociraptors running outside my schoolyard. We'd just gotten Flame. It was the new thing. So I look at this and I think, my goodness, Melissa is getting into a 12-year-old child, and you remember, you stir up in the reader, in this case me, what it was like to be that age, especially because, as you mentioned before, Macy is very alienated in a way. She doesn't have loads and loads of friends. So there's so many themes in this book, and one of them is self-knowledge and also what it takes to know yourself, stand up straight and tall, and be complete in yourself before you reach out to friendship, which is amazing. And some of her self-development is journaling to express her thoughts and feelings to deal with her experience. I thought it was a great device to get into her head. Was that to journal, to write this from, to sink into the character of Macy, which you did beautifully. I'm in awe of that. I could never write for a 12-year-old, 11-year-old. I'm sorry. I'm looking forward to book two, you see, so I'm already flipping her age over. How on earth do you get back to that age to write so authentically from that point of view?
Some people probably say I've never grown up. But it is easier for me to recall childhood experiences from the ones that seemed disastrous at the time to the things that scared me or worried me or, you know, those things that were maybe a little more on the negative side to the happiest moments. So I recall what it felt like to be a child, and I'm very blessed because I have four children, and I do draw on their experiences. And they are extremely helpful because it is a different age that we live in. Being a child now is a little different than, you know, growing up 20-plus years ago. So they are very helpful. It's just a matter of listening and being a little intuitive and, you know, seeing what their experiences are like and listening to how they interpret them and giving them the space to see what they'll do to fix their problems or how they interact with other kids or what the other kids are saying and doing at this time that might give them questions or, you know, give them ideas. So,
but when you're actually sitting down,
and
I should have warned everyone, I suffer from interruptitis. I'm just going to let everyone know that. I'm looking for a 12-step or a cure. I haven't found one yet. But there's a difference between observation and inhabiting the character. You totally immerse yourself into that character. There is nothing that is not a 12-year-old, because I have a child who will be 12 this year. I have one who's just turned 24. So I have a huge range, two different generations, and yet I feel both could actually identify with this book. Because it's not just, you know, it's not just a selling point about dreams that come true, because I really do believe everyone has that happen at one point or another. It's also Macy's loss of her mother. She's still going through that. She's coping with artistic. She has a very artistic side. She wants to write. I really like that. How much of Macy wanting to write is almost reflected as experience through your eyes? If you know what I mean.
I think I do. I'm assuming you're asking, is that a little more of me?
Right.
Yes. One of the things I found, and one of the tips that I had planned to give, is that I used writing from a very early age. I read at a very early age, and I started writing at a very early age. And it took until after I finished this first book to really understand that about myself. I have tons of books written that I never finished. And for a while, I beat myself up over that. And I thought, why can't you ever get to the end? But I realized that there were certain times in my life where I would turn to writing, whether it was in a journal or diary or actually writing, a story. And I used those as a way to go through whatever the emotional process was at the time, whether it was some childhood angst over my parents or dealing with, as a teenager wanting to be in relationships. Like, I wrote the absolute worst romance novel you can ever imagine at about 13. Trying to write about romance when you have absolutely no experience with it and develop characters that like each other from a 13-year-old's perspective, to go back and read it now, that it was, one of the worst books written, and it was never finished. But I realized what would happen is that I would stop writing at the point where I had either fixed the problem or had worked through the experience. And that's why they weren't finished. So to me, writing was the outlet. And I hesitated to make Macy a writer. I think sometimes that can be an overdone thing where writers write about writing. And that, because that's what you know and that's what you, what you do. But in her case, this was a character that actually spoke to me in my head. So it was okay. She gave the okay on that because that is part of who she is. And yes, it may be because that's part of who I am. And hers is a little different. It is not my storyline. She uses the journaling way more than I, ever did. But I incorporated that piece of it partially because I'm hoping that when children read and can get excited about reading and writing again, that we can bring them back to that. That is something I see as maybe lacking in the children of today. So it was important to put something in there that they could again be, writing is a good thing. And I'd like to do that more, and I'd like to be better at it. So, it's always a hope when you're publishing for children that they can take that from it and learn something.
Oh, and without a doubt, because you actually run the programs at libraries and community-based events where children can discuss dreams and dream symbols, right?
Yes. And
that's
I've
amazing.
Had some doozies. There are some children who have shared dreams. And, the other kids are like, wow, that's crazy. Or, yes, I've had one like that. So it's interesting to see them talk about the dreams. And I have supplies that I bring, and they create their own journal so that they can take it home. And if they want to do it, to write their thoughts and feelings, they can do that. If they want to write about whatever, baseball, whatever it might be, if they want to draw pictures because they're more of an artist than a writer, that's fine. It's whatever they create the journal for, that's what it's meant to be. So we have a really good time with it.
Have any of the observations you made while running this at a library or community-based event, have any of those observations contributed to book two?
I don't know that they've contributed to it, but they have reinforced the knowledge that this book is something that kids will be interested in, that they do have dreams, and we talk about, not just dreams that you have at night or your daydreams about, whatever, but that it can be your real dreams. What are your life goals? What do you want to be? What are your priorities going to be in life? So we intermix the dream idea with, reality-based goals, and the dreams that you can have that are just sometimes off the wall or that might come true. And usually in each group, there's one that will say, yeah, I had this dream, and this happened, and this happened, and then it happened. So it is a real thing.
Well,
so
it's like validation for everything you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would think if I heard that, I would be beaming with pride if I were the author because you're seeing validation right then and there.
It is. It's very rewarding. And it keeps me going. I started the series with specific intent, like I said, to encourage more reading and writing, and to let, to give kids that empowerment for whatever their goals are, and to inspire them to make goals. So it is very rewarding.
But that's not all you do. I mean, the other thing, you put me to shame because I sit around and stare blankly. That's my hobby. That's what I do. But
Okay, not only do you write, not only do you have a book coming out next month, and you, not only do you have The Power Awaken already out there, but you also combine a background in music therapy to help both children and adults. You're a music therapist. So, I mean, where do you find the time? Does that add to, or is it just, I always like to ask where you find the time, especially since you're a music therapist, you treat children, you treat adults, you use a variety of music activities to elicit or enhance family memories or teach music and relaxation techniques. Because kids also are more stressed out now than ever before. So was part of the impetus to get Macy going to help with that as well, to help the children have an outlet, and adults
it's
as well.
It's a very symbiotic relationship between the book and what I'm doing. They are integral to one another. That was the hope, is that, you know, bringing in the book and combining the music and music activities and teaching kids more outlets. The journaling is one outlet. Music is another outlet. Being able to do music relaxation activities or anything that gets you moving with music is helpful to de-stress and to re-energize. So, you know, it makes sense to me. It is difficult at times to find the time to make them all work together. It takes a little bit of planning, and there's a lot to be said for the Google Calendar that pops up on my smartphone. That's my key. I found that I was, you know, we went through the holidays, and then you go through the sluggish part of January, and I feel like I'm behind on book two. I had planned actually to have that out probably in January, February. And sometimes life just doesn't go the way you want it to, so you take a breath, and you reset, and you refocus, and you come back to it. But I found that I needed something a little more structured. If I'm going to do this, and I'm going to write, and I'm going to put out a series and promise people that more are coming, I needed a way that would help me. So I plan random times in the calendar and set email reminders and pop-up alerts so that I can see it physically and hear that little dinging. It's a lot like Pavlov. You hear the ding, you go, oh, time to write. So that gives me, you know, sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's 10 minutes. Sometimes the pop-up comes and I'm in the middle of an orthodontist appointment and I go, okay, there's a missed opportunity. We'll have to, you know, find something else. But I make it at random times during the day because I don't have an 8-hour work day Monday through Friday where I can just write. Most indie authors are holding down other jobs and doing this because they love it. So we don't always have the time to dedicate to writing. So whatever time there is available, you do it. But like anything else in life, your house might need cleaned or you need to get X done. But even though you have the time, you'll kind of let it slip away and do something else. So to stay focused, I actually schedule the times in, and I try to follow those times the best I can and get it done.
But that's, I mean, I think that's amazing because I usually just plan it and then I write it. I write a first draft and then I'll wait a little while and then I go for it. But like you, I wrote the latest novel on weekends. And now I'm doing edits on that, but the first one I actually had the time to sit down. I think the discipline for scheduling, okay, I'm going to devote this hour to writing. Do you ever confront, I don't really believe in writer's block. I believe in frustrating delays where the story or the characters aren't speaking to you as clearly as they might. Do you ever suffer from that or no?
That's probably the best way to put it. It isn't really a writer's block. It is not getting that voice and getting those pieces together. What I have decided is if you can't think of anything, you still have to sit down and do it. You may only get a sentence, and it may take you 20 minutes and you get a sentence and that's all you walk away with. But that one sentence or that one next thing, for the next few hours, while you're doing whatever it is you're doing, or driving to the job that actually pays, or whatever, that is mulling around in your head, so that the next time you come to sit down, you have more of a story developed because it's been cooking in your brain since however many sentences you managed to get the last time. So you just keep capitalizing off of all those little things. There are times where I will sit down and I'll write and I'll do a sentence, and then 10 minutes later I'll come up with the next sentence. And then there are times where I will sit down and write and it'll be a whole chapter and I will run out of time because I need to be to the next place.
I love how you put that. I just love it because that describes my style better than anything I've ever heard, which is cooking. It has to cook in my brain and then it spills out onto the page because I only have two working brain cells. So, I mean, it takes time. I have to build up. I can't have that kind of an hour. I'll just stare blankly. But I do want to know this. There are times I have written almost entire chapters in my head and it's kept me up all night. I'm too lazy by nature to get up and write it down. But has that ever happened to you where you're where you're excited about that next session that you've scheduled because there's a new door that's open to you and you can't wait to kind of explore it?
Absolutely. And there are times, especially with the first book, if I let it go too long, it would be 2:00 in the morning and there would be Macy in my head saying, "Aren't you going to write my story?"
Right.
And the next piece would come up, and there I would be at 3:00 in the morning with everyone sleeping, with a small light on in the living room, typing out the next pieces that came.
You have more motivation than me. I'm just too lazy. I really am. But I always ask, and I'll ask every writer this, your process. For instance, I listen to music when I write. Do you do that? At 3 a.m., you're going to have the quiet there. But on those days when you're busy, you return from the orthodontist, you're in pain, you're hurting, but the window pops up. Are you able to sit without something blocking all the noise around and write, or no?
I typically like things quiet. Now, I might need to play something really kind of hardcore or very fast with pounding beat, and it kind of gets me energized to sit down and do it. Other times I'll sit down and I'll put some relaxation or meditation music on, something new agey, and I'll let that play in the background. The biggest key for me is when I can't hear anything else, when there's no sound, not the refrigerator kicking on and off or the clothes tumbling in the dryer or the car on the street, whatever it might be. When I don't hear any of that, I know I'm in the headspace that I want.
Right.
I have to create it,
so good for you.
It sometimes happens better than others. I can create that around four kids jumping around the living room playing together. There'll be times we're cooking dinner, we're getting ready to sit down, and some really grand idea will pop into my head. So we'll finish dinner, clean up, and I'll say, okay, I have a piece that I have to write right now. And I'll sit down and do it. And they usually get excited. They're used to it now. So I'll sit down. I'll start typing. I'll get done whatever the amount was that needed to get done at that point. And usually they want to hear about it when I'm done. And I can still block all of them out, maybe 95%, because there's still that 5% of mother awareness so that makes sure that, you know no
if
one.
If it gets too quiet, your ears perk up and you start investigating.
That 5% of awareness is okay, they're too quiet. Now what are they doing?
Exactly. Yeah, you always have to go for that. I admire that because I just don't think that I could do that.
I have to have noise-canceling
headsets on, and that's when the kids all want to come in. But you answered a question I was going to ask anyhow, and that is, it can take so long. Like, for instance, and we'll cover this later, probably after the break, but I am going the traditional publishing route because obviously I'm a masochist. I mean, I a sadomasochist because I'm doing this to myself. But a lot of times I've noticed because it's been years, you spend years writing, and you obviously have yourself. But one of the important factors I don't think writers talk about, it's just not front and center, is how your family reacts to that, because it can take so long. And you've already kind of answered that in that your children are very supported. They're very interested. And what about other family members? Are they interested? Do they ask you how book two's going? Or is it kind of a just in the background thing? Maybe takes a background to your music therapy.
I think for the most part, I'll get a question every so often. For the most part, everyone leaves me alone and they assume I'm writing. It's always nice to have that question because if I have let the writing go for too long and so much as how's the writing going, then the guilt starts, and you go, okay, I need to sit down and do this. I'm not a perfect writer. I don't have a perfect process. I don't even write the perfect way. I wrote that book knowing that there were rules that I completely ignored, and that's okay. It was the way I wanted to do it. But it's nice to have that someone check in. A lot of times people in the community are finding out doing music, and it's someone who's read the book that's in there. They'll say, well, how's book two going? Because I really want to know why is Gran so cranky. Or, hey, I really want more of Annie and her mother's story. Are you putting that in book two? And that will get me back in the groove.
Right, and I'm dying for all of that. I mean, all of those questions, I hope you're pummeled with them, because I'm really interested. I think just the most, I know I'm repeating myself, but the most fascinating thing is here she's discovering this. I mean, she's went through this journey. She's learned a lot. I don't want to give away anything about the book, but you can find The Power Awakened on Barnes & Noble, and you can find it on Amazon. Do you also have a site or anything where we can purchase that?
I do have a website that will link you to different things. It's melissacarey.com. I am in the process of changing my publishing route. The first time around, the one I chose didn't quite work as well for me. It wasn't quite the relationship I wanted and the communication level that I wanted. So I am switching over. There's a little bit of a glitch right now. Probably the e-book has disappeared from Amazon for whatever reason. So Monday I'll be calling to find out exactly why I can't find it on there, which is okay because I'm actually pulling everything and republishing through a different place, and that will be up and running in the next week. So no worries there. But
you also have a social media presence as well. I mean, there's not just melissacarey.com. You're also, I love following you. Melissa's on Twitter as MC, like cat, B like, I don't know, bone, 1219. And I love following you. I love mentioning you on Writer Wednesday, which I always like mentioning just because I think writers should support other writers.
And we appreciate it. I love it that you do that. I love that you take the time just to give the shout outs to everybody, and that keeps me going. When I see that on Wednesday, I go, you know, you're not getting I'm not earning the Writer Wednesday if I'm not writing that week. So if I have left a few days go and that pops up and you've done that for us, I go, okay, need to get back to the writing. Everybody's
right,
waiting
for
book
two. It can be so stressful
to
do. Just the continuity. And also kind of there's an impotence at times where you've come up against something and you have to figure it all out. I mean, has that been something you've experienced in book two? Because you have so many storylines going in the best of ways. When people are coming up and I'm dying to know how Macy, what step she takes next. Because she had a huge revelation in The Power Awakened. I mean, she didn't even really suspect. It was there. She kind of sort of expected that she might have certain, shall we say, abilities that most kids do. And then she discovers it to be a fact. And then you set everything up beautifully where you get to that last page and you look for more pages. So your skill and talent is right there. But I'll tell you what, we have to take a quick break, but when we come, well, it's going to be a little longer break because I get to monopolize Melissa in the green room while you all get to listen to the ads. That said, when we come back, I would love to talk a bit more about your journey, as it were, in self-publishing. A lot of people that we talk to are indie, and I love indie books. I love supporting them. So right after the break, we will be back with Melissa Carey, the fantastic author of The Power Awakened, and join us then.
Hello, everyone. B. Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always, in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Arvel Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at arvelbird.com and get a hold of all of Arvel's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I can't even say it. If no one noticed, and Melissa, I know you'll love this. If no one noticed, even the fantastic voice talent who did the voiceover for this show kind of tripped. I don't know why I picked Lydia's Literary Lowdown there. If I say it very slowly, I can actually manage it. But before the break, we were talking with the fantastic author of the trilogy. I think, is it going to be a trilogy, Melissa?
Oh, and someone asked me that. I had an interview with Paper, and he said, how many are there? And I said, I don't know. I'll tell you when I find out.
Oh, that's
so
even better.
It could be three. It could be 10. When I feel like the story is finished and I feel like there's no more to teach and no more to say and you know, no more to gain from reading those, then I will tie it up and it will be done. It could be three. It could be seven. It could be whatever.
But,
so I don't
but
have
it in mind. So, and no wonder, I would not, having read The Power Awakened, which is the first book in the series, Macy's Guide to the Odd, Strange, Bizarre, Unique, Unexplained, and Twisted, and I love that. I love the title of the series. But in the first book, I mean, we're starting with an 11-year-old girl, and she's discovering certain things. I would be fascinated to read into her 20s and maybe beyond there, because it's only going to get more complicated from there. There are all sorts of things. I get excited thinking about it, though I could never write it. I get excited thinking about it because I think, oh, my goodness. You know, I think, and you'll have to agree or disagree with me here, I always, whenever I'm reading, I'm trying to figure that story out. I'm thinking about all the possibilities because I am a whore for serial books. You heard it. I said the word whore. I'm a whore for serial books. I love series. And to know that you don't have an end date, you know, Ma Benchy just passed, and I absolutely adore her. I did not cry, but I got close on the day that she passed. Why? Because there's no more of the series. And I hope that with Macy, it goes on and on and on, because you have such fertile ground. Doesn't that excite you? I mean, I think you're to be commended, because you came up with this brilliant story, and it can go on forever. It's just fabulous.
It will. I am excited. I think there's a lot. There's a lot that can be said. I actually, the reason that I am behind is that I started the second book, and Macy's in there in my head. And we somewhere in there, I realized that that is actually the third book, and that if I write it that way, that there are missing pieces. So I chucked it and started over. And began a completely different second book, which I'm happy happened before I published. Yes, it hurt. But the good thing is that when I go to publish the third book, it should be out much quicker, because I already have a very good start to that one, unless something drastically changes between now and the very final copy of the second book. It should be fine to go the way it is.
Oh, I'm just so excited to see it. But that brings us back to what I was supposed to segue to, but I'm not a graceful segwayer. I don't know if that's a word or not, but it prepares the audience that I'm not always that wonderful with grammar. We're lucky I haven't dropped an A-bomb, which is ain't. Thank you very much. But it does bring us around to publishing. And I do love indie authors. I'm finding myself looking through, because I'm a paperback, hardback. I love the feeling of a book in my hands. And I've only found one limitation with my Kindle Fire, and that is I run the battery out before the book is over. So now I'm in a weird position I've never been in before. If you give me book two, due next month, if you give me book two in Macy's series, I'm going to want to read that until I am done. And now I'm in an awkward kind of, the battery will run out, and then I turn to a paperback. But you chose to self-publish. My little aside meant nothing. There was no segue there. Melissa, really, you should be more strict with me. But what are some of the more and more people, I think the indies, I'm getting a lot more into indie authors. I'm reading some absolutely excellent work like yours and other indie authors I'm going to have on air, along with traditional published authors. What was your kind of personal view, personal decision to go ahead and follow the self-publishing indie route?
I think it's the roadblocks to traditional publishing. I don't have that kind of patience. So I knew when I had the idea, and this day, I've written over 17 manuscripts are in the file drawer and in various computers, and I think I still have some on floppy disks, if anyone remembers what those are.
I do.
I knew you would. The children I'm writing for, not so much. I have completely lost your question. Remind me.
No, with your personal. Oh, no. With the way I ramble on, trust me, of the two of us, you will be the most coherent person on this show. I kind of intend for it to be that way. But it was why you were saying that you didn't have the patience with traditional publishing, and I totally understand that. It's not gotten easier. It's gotten more difficult, but do go on.
Yes. So I knew this story. The other ones were waiting, and I probably would have queried them out and I would have tried them. But this one, when it finished, as I was writing it, I knew when it was finished, I wanted it out. I wanted it out as soon as it was done, it felt important, felt like the time was right, and I didn't want to have to wait, and I like control. So I wanted control over the content. I didn't want someone to read it and say, not that people didn't read it and edit and give all kinds of feedback. But I want to take it somewhere and I said, you can't publish this. No one's going to want to read that. Or you can't tell kids that. Or whatever it might be. So I went in thinking, well, you know, I want control of how I tell this story. And that was the patience and the control were two of the issues. I don't know. That's really probably
the major.
But
then without bringing up any names, okay, because mm-hmm. this is something I think listeners need to hear about anyway, because you faced problems where many other indie authors have found themselves in a less than favorable situation with those they chose to publish through.
Mm-hmm.
So with that...
Well, the nicest thing is that I wasn't... Not that where I chose to go first doesn't work for other people, but it didn't work for me. It didn't feel like home. It didn't feel like the place I wanted. Well, I'm an indie author. I don't have to stay with them. I can try something else. I think it's the biggest thing. If you're writing and you're going to go the indie route, you're not going to know everything. Honestly, I have learned so much in the last year that I didn't know. If I had known things before I published, I probably would have changed either how I went about it or pieces of the book or like now, I'm changing the titles. Macy's Guide to the Odd, Strange, Bizarre, Unique, Unexplained, and Twisted is it. The Power Awakened worked for the first one. It lets you know that, okay, this is it. But we get it now, and to me, it's Macy's Guide, it's her journals, whatever. They are just going to be simply numbered. Book one, book two.
I love that.
Because you get it. This is the series. The title is big enough. We don't need to muck it up with another title. Had I thought that maybe prior to publishing, maybe I would have done book one on the first one. I don't think so. I think I would have kept it. But this is the thing. We have that control and a little bit of empowerment to change our mind and to do things different. So the first one didn't work out. I'll try something new. You're never going to know every answer as an indie author until you put the work out there and just experience it. You will learn so much by putting it out, working with whatever company you choose to do this with, and you'll figure it out as you go along.
Right, and what advice, first of all, I think there's very valuable advice just hidden in your answer, and that is you pointed out that you had people edit it, you had people look at it, you ran it by people. This is most often the complaint that I hear is that some of this, and I've run across it many times because I am getting seriously invested in indie authors now, who, like yourself, I'm dying to see what comes next. What advice, other than make sure it's edited, would you get out to them? Because it almost sounds, to me, there are some things, perhaps it's just a situation where there are some things you can only learn by moving forward.
Let me think here for a second. I know we're on the program, so I can't think for too long to get that answer.
No, because there wasn't really a clearly stated question, was there? Because I was going to say, what advice do you have? But you gave them the advice I think every indie author needs the most, and that is make sure that someone's looking at that work. Make sure
that
someone
is.
Who's not a family member, who's not on your payroll, who's not a co-worker,
yeah.
or someone who would be threatened.
Oh, that's pretty fast. Yeah, and that is your number one thing. I went into this and I had people read it. That were friends and family first. And I said, please don't tell me I like it. Please tell me what's wrong with it. I would much rather you tell me what's wrong with it before I pay to have this put out than after to have someone say, oh, well, why did you do that way? Or did you realize that this was wrong? Or whatever it might have been. So I ask for the hardest critique ever. And if you're afraid of that, you are probably not a writer.
Right.
You can't keep it in your house, in your file, and only read it and then think you're going to put it out and publish whether, you know, I think it's great. I think traditional publishing is great. I think having a book vetted and having people that know the industry and know what people are reading, I think it's a wonderful thing. I don't know that it will ever go away. But I love that we live in an age where if you have something good to say, that you have the ability to do it for a relatively reasonable amount and that anyone can have that dream and accomplish that goal. But with that said, I know exactly what you're talking about. Um, I Like you, I read print books, but I read a lot of e-books. I use my Kindle three books a week, and a lot of indie authors. And sometimes you think, okay, did you have an editor? Did you have someone that looked at it? I'm completely embarrassed because this thing was looked at, I can't tell you how many times, and there is one typo in the thing that will be fixed when it comes back out under the other one. But as a writer, it better be impeccable. There can't be grammar mistakes. There can't be a misspelling. Your continuity has to be there. And the only way you're going to get that is to distance yourself and let someone else take a look at it. You're right. Too invested in it. You know the story too well. Sometimes my eyes glaze over paragraphs because I wrote it. I know what it says. So I'm not looking at those details like someone outside would.
And that's something you always need. It doesn't matter if you're going traditional. It doesn't matter if you're going indie. And I like the term indie a lot better than I do self-publishing. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I've heard self-publishing. But let me tell you this. I have read and just become really attached to some indie authors. However, not that long ago, I will not name names here, but there was an agented author traditionally published, and I think every indie or traditional reader, no matter which kind of avenue you go through, I read this book and I thought, my God, where was the editor? And this was all done. It was one of the big six publishers. Right? I mean, I look at, and this will be controversial, but I'm going to say it. I would not read 50 Shades of Grey for anything. I just wouldn't. And there's a reason for that, because I've heard the writing is abysmal.
This is probably bad, but at the expense of adding more controversy, do you know that they have paid her to author a book on writing?
I curse like a sailor. I am fairly certain that I could probably get tenure at Harvard or anywhere else to teach sailors how to curse properly and effectively. I'm just not going to respond to that. I think I read an opening paragraph on somebody's blog or something like that. I read a bit of it and I went, my dear God.
I made it through the first one and couldn't get through anymore. But that's just, you know, and it is the writing. It is, to me, the writing that killed it. And there are tons of styles, and there's tons of ways to present it. And I think one of the things as an indie author is you can't go into this thinking, I'm going to make $1 million. This is going to be the next bestseller. I've always gone into it with, by the time I get to the third book, what would be really nice is if I had a nice middle-class income salary yearly. For writing, that's a more reasonable picture, you know. So not to go in with I'm going to sell tons of books and that's going to be my life, because this 400,000 people today are trying to market a book out there just here in the U.S. You know, so you know you have to be realistic and you have to realize that you're writing for whatever your target audience is. So you have to take the population and take the percentage down to that target population and realize how many other authors are writing for that population, and some already have people they love, and they'll be looking for their next book, and maybe they're not going they're not going to find someone new. And for indie authors, it's especially difficult. It's one of the things that I would have published a long time ago had I had the finances to self-publish. That was the biggest lack that I had, that lack of knowledge on how to do it, and the not that I didn't have the financial security to take that kind of money and invest in it. So I've created a project. I went to someone. I said, how are we going to fix this? And we actually do. We have figured out a way to do it beyond my wildest dreams. And we'll be bringing that up.
You know you can't say that to me without me saying, is that something you're willing to talk about a little more or no?
Sure. It's not completely up and running. We are in development. It will be an indie-loving platform. The name of it is Universal Wit, and we will, by invite only, take in authors who are willing to let, whatever crowd of people we have read the book and help them finance through crowdfunding opportunities, finance not just the publishing but the marketing, because this is the other thing. Indie authors don't have the marketing budget, and if you're putting that in you know, we won't necessarily be the publishing company. We're looking at, you've chosen someone, although we will be able to offer that as well. If you've chosen someone, you know how much you're going to need to pay them for this, this, and this, and that's what you need. But you don't have those finances, but you have people that support you. You have friends, you have families, you have people who may have an interest in whatever the book is that you're selling, whatever the topic is. And so we are going to systematically get them funded and provide support and backup and everything else. And we are not just going to do this with indie authors. We are bringing in indie bookstores, because I don't want indie bookstores to go away. The independent bookstore in my town is one of my favorite places. And the bookshop owner is one of my favorite people, and she gets it. And she listens to the people who are coming in, and she knows what they want to read. She knows what they're looking for. And these people are invaluable, and we probably will open out to libraries and things like that. But this indie publisher, indie author kind of symbiotic relationship, we're going to combine that and have them help each other and schedule events, and then take this. The crowdfunding is such a wonderful thing right now, and this surge of people realizing that we can help each other get things done is great. So with the indie bookstores, we are not just going to say, oh, come help us and take some books in. We're going to help them fund community projects, because you've got your indie bookstores in communities, and they know what their communities need. So it helps market them, and it will help, raise their profile in the community, but they can get the projects done that a community needs done. So we're going to bring them in and help them as well. So we have an incredible system. I went with just one request. I'm like, I don't want other indie authors who have something really good to share to not be able to get that out there because they have a lack of resources. Right. How can you help me? And this has become something that is bigger than I would ever have imagined. And there will be more things that get added. We're kind of very organic. We know exactly what we want. We have the setup going. We'll be launching. We have the crowdfunding site. The folks over there are wonderful. And the relationship there will be very strong and healthy. And we imagine it will be for years and years to come. But we're going to kind of allow ourselves to grow and listen to
that's the biggest thing,
the needs and the things and how things change and how, people are fickle sometimes. One day you want one thing, and the next day everybody's looking for something different. So you have to be willing to change and adapt when necessary. So we're just very excited to launch this project. And, in the next month or so, we'll be really up and running. The site is out there. Tuesday it will be getting its makeover and, tech stuff that needs to be done will be done. And, we're just very excited that we'll be able to offer indie authors, what they're looking for.
Well, I really like that it's by people who have read the work and believe it deserves to get out there, because that is somewhat of a problem to traditional publishing, I think, is that you have to go through an agent. They don't really look at unsolicited manuscripts. You have to go with a smaller press if you want someone to do that. And then that someone from the publisher actually looking at your manuscript, at your work, and saying, okay, either yes or no. In your case, it's totally different. And adaptation is the name of the game right now, because it's not that the future is uncertain in publishing. I've never believed that. I refuse to believe that. The future is not uncertain, but it is adapting. It is changing day by day. And for you to create a publishing kind of platform where it's by the reader, they're making that decision instead of just one or two people, that makes a huge difference. Because I've seen loads and loads of work from indie authors who say they can't get an agent, they can't get someone to break down the big six or the larger presses. And if I were on what you're creating, I would be screaming and contributing for some of these authors to be heard, because they are fantastic. There's so many, and I'm very fortunate, because this season I'll be interviewing a lot of them. I think it's a brilliant idea, and I hope that you will come back Lord knows it's going to have to be later this year because I'm booked for the next few months, but I would love to have you back on just to speak about this endeavor because it's hugely important. I know loads of indie authors who are going to be very interested in this approach, who believe in their work, and sometimes it certainly seems like, and this is just my point of view, take it as you will, but traditional publishing can be crushing to you at times. It can be crushing because there is so much rejection where you almost make it and yet you don't make it. To have the readers actually looking over this, it just sounds like a fantastic plan. But I demand of thee, how are you going to be able to get this up and running and then also get book two out there?
The thing is that when I took this project and asked about it, it became something that that they latched onto. So I will be responsible for a smaller portion of it than I would have been had I tried to do this on my own. So there is a lot to be said for working with a team and having other people that support your idea and that back the indie industry. And so hopefully I can, you know, there will probably be many calendar alerts for that as well.
No doubt.
But we'll make it work. I mean, it's we're moving forward, and you know, I'm very grateful because I do kind of roll with the punches and go where life leads me, and I tend to listen to my gut and my instinct. So, you know,
that's
there might be things
to
that
be
are
a
on the bottom of the
time.
Priority. Yes, the things that are maybe not at the top of the priority list, maybe they aren't supposed to be part of my life anymore, and so this will rise up a little bit. And you do. You just, you know, you look at the things that are important for your goals and where you're going in the future.
Right, and it looks like you've got a lot of places to go. I think you should get some new running shoes just because you will need them. With all that you're planning on doing, it's just, but it sounds like, you know, more opportunities day by day are coming along for indie authors, and I'm happy to see every one of them because I discover so many great ones day after day. Now, I want a reminder of where we can find you. We can find you on Twitter, and that is
NCB1219.
And
I'm also on Facebook. It's Facebook.com/MelissaCarey.page, I think. But if you look up Pages, I'm there as Melissa Carey. You can also find that all that information on my site, MelissaCarey.com. I think that's the best place to probably go. Yeah,
but you're
going
to have
that
much more.
And then go from
the
there.
Next time I interview you, you're probably going to have the other site where it's ready, where indie authors go and
that
utilize
be,
that.
We are pushing for that to be launched in the next month. So we are canvassing for those indie bookstores that are interested in this project and that want to be part of it, and the indie authors that would like to be invited in. And ready to roll with it.
Right, and that's something, when that goes live, you need to be tweeting that liberally because there are so many indie authors who can use that, but the indie bookstores are a totally different story. They also need, you know, I want to support the indie bookstores because I don't want them to go away. I don't want any bookstores to go away. And that's the other thing that we're seeing left and right is that they are going away. So this, to me, is almost a preservation project of good works that may not make it through the traditional grindstone, if you will, but still very worthy of being read. Melissa, I cannot thank you enough for showing up, and I'm already kind of tentatively committing you to being back on the show again sometime.
Absolutely. I would love to. I love talking with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I look forward to having you on again. Just a quick heads up before the show actually is done. I'm really looking forward to next week's show when we're going to have Eric Cobb Miller, a.k.a. Spittune. I cannot wait to give you the story behind that. He's a retired dentist who traded his drill for a quill to be a literary humorist. He's the author of the Spittune Saloon Trilogy, Spittune Saloon, Rinse and Spittune, Proprietor, Sad Songs and Funny Tales on Tap, Overheard at the Bar at Spittune Saloon, and Toast from the Tap at Spittune Saloon. I laughed so hard. I cannot recommend these books I just can't recommend them enough. And while you're at it, check out Melissa Carey on melissacarey.com or check her out on Twitter at mcb1219. Everybody, have a great week and write on.